Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Marco Visconti. Marco is a lifelong practitioner of the Western esoteric tradition, with a particular interest in Thelema and Crowlenia. Welcome to the Great Awakening Ministry. I am Minister and Yogini Joanne Lee. And on this week's show, we have Marco Visconti. Marco is a lifelong practitioner of the Western esoteric tradition with a particular interest in Thelema and Crowlenia. He was responsible for the transition of numerous key esoteric texts from English to Italian, such as Michael Bateau's Lucky Hoodoo and Cosmic Meditation. Marco's new book, Aleister Crowley's Mysticism, A Practical Guide, is out on December the 5th, 2025, and focuses on spiritual realization and awakening to one's innate power, and directly addresses Crowley's overlooked mystical side, centering on the great work, not on ceremonial magic, but on spiritual union and self-realization.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Marco.
Yes.
Nice to meet you. Lovely, lovely to meet you too. And welcome to the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. So I've got lots of lovely questions for you on your incredible book, Aleister Crowley's Mysticism, A Practical Guide. Beautiful.
So, thank you.
Yeah, so to start off, Marco, please tell us how your book directly addresses Aleister Crowley's overlooked mystical side, centering on the great work, spiritual union, and self-realization. As a yogini, this is what I'm all about. So this is really interesting.
Of course. As you will know, and as the listeners will know, Aleister Crowley's figure is contentious, to say the least. And very often, people still focus on the person. So whatever Crowley the man has done, or maybe has not done, you know, in his very long and complex and tumultuous life, we should say. But Crowley's biggest achievement was the foundation of this magical philosophy called Thelema. And Thelema is a Greek word. It means will. And of course, many will know already that the aphorism, the central aphorism of Thelema is "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Most people don't know that there's a second part to it, and that second part is "Love is the law, love under will." The two things go together. You cannot really say one and ignore the other. You have to put them together to see the whole philosophy behind this transmission. And I call it a transmission because Crowley received it. Many might say it. He channeled it with the aid of his first wife, Rose Kelly, during their honeymoon in Cairo in 1904. So we're talking 21 years ago. They were in Cairo. And the interesting story there is that while Crowley at the time was already a ceremonial magician, was already somebody heavily interested in the occult, in the esoterica, his wife wasn't really. And yet it was his wife, Rose, that prompted him to seek contact with them. At the time, they didn't know who they were, whose call they were hearing, but it turned out that these otherworldly intelligences, Crowley would call them preterhuman intelligences, decided to don the masks of the god of Egypt. And so over 3 days in 1904, over the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th of April of 1904, Crowley received the message from three deities that he would call Nuit, Hadit, and Rahurkuhit. If there's anybody who's listening who's very familiar with the Egyptian deities, they will know that these names don't really fit the what we know the same deities would have been called by the Egyptians in time, because of course over the last 120 years Egyptian studies have evolved. But ideally, the idea is that Nuit is the goddess of the night sky and represents the entirety of creation, whereby Hadit, or better known by Egyptian scholars nowadays as Behudi, is the center point, the individuation point, if we wouldn't use maybe a Jungian term, of existence. And the two are constantly seek for each other. Like Hadit is constantly expanding and Nuit is always striving to reach her. Now, the interplay between these two cosmic in essences is what Crowley would call the crowned and conquering child, Rahur Kuit. That is the interplay between space and motion. Now, why I'm telling you of this? Because this is the mysticism of Telema. This is the philosophical underpinning of this magical and very practical philosophy that often gets completely overlooked by everything very interesting, or maybe very contentious, as we say, that Crowley has done in his life, starting from his mountaineer exploits as a young man, as a writer of various qualities. Some people will love his writing, some people will hate his writing. I'm kind of in the middle. Like, I like some things, I don't like the other. And of course, the fact that he lived a very libertine lifestyle and did so completely unapologetic. Remember, this was a time when Oscar Wilde ended up in prison and ended up, in fact, exiled from this country because of his similar libertine lifestyle. And while there's no real evidence that the two ever met, they definitely hang out in the same circles. They were both staying at the Savoy Hotel here in London and having like lavish parties at the time. But of course, Crowley really like played into this maybe bad boy persona. And sadly, that's what he is most remembered for. Mm. In my books, in the first book, The Aleister Crowley Manual, and this book coming up now in a month from now, wow, it's almost there, The Aleister Crowley's Mysticism, what I try to do is I try to offer readers a pathway to understand this magical philosophy, which as I said is this constant striving to return to the absolute, okay, with practical exercises drawing both from Crowley's tradition and so the rituals and the practices that he wrote and he presented to his students during his lifetime, but also trying to to present new ways of addressing the same practices, possibly more, I don't want to say more apt for the modern person. But as we know, like, we really don't have like big mansions like Crowley used to have, where you can actually set up lavish temples and engage with complex ceremonies. At the same time, we all of us have at least like maybe one corner of a room where we can set up a little altar, and we can in fact sit with ourselves and go, instead of trying always to go outward, which is kind of the curse of our modern life, learning how to go back inward, and by finding the path inward, finding the path to the absolute.
That's
so
right.
In a nutshell, this is what the book is about.
That's really great, because the whole of our existence is to be in this realm of duality, is for mm-hmm. spiritual union, is for self-realization, is for spiritual awakening, isn't it?
Absolutely, 100%. And this is exactly the task of anyone who decides to find themselves in the tenets of Telema. As I said, like it is do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law has been understood falsely as do whatever you want. And it's kind of like the polar opposite to that, because that will that is implied in the aphorism is in fact one and the same as the will of the divine. Whatever you decide to call the divine, it can be God, it can be the goddess, it can be whatever is higher than you that you find, however, a tether to, like you find a connection with. And so learning how to identify your finite incarnated will, which is whatever you want to do at the beginning, with that bigger, and in fact the biggest will that there is, it means that you're going to set yourself on the path that was meant for you in the moment of your incarnation on this plane.
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's what I always say. We have within us, there's only one stream. Yeah. There's only one stream. And even in Genesis, it says, God says, I make good and I make evil, because there's only one stream. And we have that free will, being born in this world of duality, to use that stream for either good or for evil. So it's free will. It's up to us to, use that for the righteous and for the good of all. So mote it be. Is it
I
not?
agree. No, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I always say to my students that it's kind of foolish to say that there's no evil in the world. Because of course, as you said, like if you understand that there's one unity,
It
you
has to have the
understand
other.
that
Yeah.
everything, there's polarity, right? Like the
That's
moment the
right.
unity is fractured and enters this space-time stream that we call reality, of course that unity, that pleroma, to use a Gnostic term, it becomes fractured, and then you will find good and you will find evil. I like to think that, and I don't know if I'm right, but I like to, let's say this has been my experience. The pleroma, the unity, is beyond all of that, right? It's
Yes.
beyond good and evil because it is
That's
the
right.
unity, right? Here in the world, we have the evil that men do, and it would be impossible to negate that. It would be impossible to looking at the world, especially in the strange times we've been living for the last 5 years or so. It would be
That's right.
impossible to negate that there's evil in this world. But again, it is down to us
Yes.
to understand who we truly are. Again, in Thelemic term, finding our true will or pure will. The two terms are kind of are interchangeable. And again, when people first read Crowley and maybe really feel a drawing to the teachings, most people tend to rethink, well, I already know my true will, that this is why I'm here, right? My true will is to read Crowley. Well, that's not it, in fact. Like you have to decide to engage in to enter that path, and you have to decide to engage with a series of practices, and then eventually you will find your true will. In my case, was completely different to what I was, I thought I would be. I thought I would be, I mean, I come from let's say upper middle class family in Italy. I thought I would be a very, straight person. And then when that happened to me in my early 20s, I became first a musician, and then I'm here teaching about Aleister Crowley. So I went
Big
to a
help, yeah.
completely different path in life, right? But again, I wouldn't do anything different, right? Because
Of
this is who
course.
I am.
Yeah, that's so important. And to make on that point, it's without the darkness, we wouldn't know the light. Without the evil, we wouldn't know the good. It's all in this realm of duality that we live in. Our choice
Absolutely.
to choose, it's beautiful. And what does, could you tell me from your view, what does spiritual awakening mean to you?
For me, it means to learn how to live constantly in the present moment with full awareness of who you are and where you're going. That means not being burdened by any sort of melancholia for the past, nor from any anxiety for the future. And this is much easier said than done, right? It is something that you can achieve, but it's something that then you have to renegotiate every time that something comes your way. Like one thing that I found that is has been, and I write this in the book, in fact, that enlightenment is not a thing that happens one day. It's not a thing like you find a switch, you flick it on, and oh, there's light finally. No, in fact, it's almost like you finally find your balance on a boat, but that boat will be rocked by the waves again and again. And now that you found the first time you found balance, it's easier to find balance again, but you will struggle, and you will have to once again renegotiate that enlightenment that you have touched on various moments. And it could be through Thelemic practices, it could be through meditation, it could be there's many ways. I think that truth is the center of a wheel with infinite spokes, and so it depends, which spoke you take. You can take different paths to that truth,
That's
but the
right.
truth is one, right?
And
And
they're,
so
that's right. They're
yeah,
all
please, please.
sacred, aren't they? They're all sacred. They all get you there in
Absolutely.
the end. They
Absolutely.
all
And
get you to the oneness in the end, the one
I
story.
that has been my experience looking at other practitioners over the last, what, 30 odd years that I've been involved with these practices. And from time to time, I've seen people finding what I would call true will through practices that are completely alien to me, right? Something that would never resonate with me, but then it resonated with them because it was what they were here in this lifetime to do and to experience.
Yeah.
And again, this kind of calls to almost like the destruction of any kind of fanaticism or you know, being obsessed with, you know, my way is the right way.
Yes, yes.
Again, I was born in Rome. I was baptized in St. Peter's Basilica as a Catholic.
Wow. Yes.
I went a different direction, as you can imagine. But sadly, you know, growing up in Rome in a strong Catholic environment, as Italy is, you tend to hear a lot like, you know, this is the right way, everything else might be good, but misguided. I don't see that. I think that as long as you don't hurt anyone, as long as you can hold any belief, as long as you don't hurt the will of another person.
That's so true. And
that's it, right? Like,
yes.
I think that you know, Crowley speaks about it at length. He speaks about the will to live versus the will to die. And basically, because, you know, like, you could extrapolate this discussion, say, well, what if my true will is to kill you? Mm. And then the point is that it can't be, because, you know, if you kill me, you will eventually be hounded down by the authority, and you will be your freedom will be impinged. So that cannot be that. Like, so true wills live in perfect harmony with each other. It's not easy. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah.
But it is what we strive to. And what I hope people that decide to engage with these practices can find in their lives. Because again, I think it really is the way to make this world a little bit more bearable than it is.
That is so true. And it's as long as it's done with love, because God, Goddess, Source, whatever you want to call the Creator, is love. You know, it's the love light energy that comes down. You know, and that is so true. And there are many millions of ways to get there, because there's only one source. There's only one Creator, you know, that's why we live in this diverse world with all different religions and different paths and different spiritual, you know, dogmas and experiences and disciplines. And it doesn't matter which way, as long as it's done with love and no harm to another, then you will get to the oneness.
And like I said, this is why, like, the second part of the Thelemic aphorism is love is the law, love and the will.
Love is the law.
Exactly. And that is, like, you know, despite will, and so your direction in this incarnation is the vector that train, like, you know, the traction basically pushes you through experiences. Mm-hmm. Well, what is the fuel of the traction? That is love. Mm-hmm. You remember, like, will in Crowley's system is called with a Greek term, which is telema. And telema, you know, the Greek language has a different words for what we would say the same, right? So telema is a specific, thelo is purpose, right? It's really like it's something that goes in a direction. And for love, Crowley used the term agape. It doesn't use heros, it doesn't use philos. So it's not so much like the love you might feel for your brother or for your lover, for your husband. It's the
divine love
for the all, the love for the universe. Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so this interplay between telos and agape, it's really like the kernel of that, right? It's the kernel of what everything we've discussing. Like, once we find that what fuels our spiritual search is the love for the all, is the love for everything that exists, then we can find our specific path towards back to the source. And I think that people need to know that this is what Crowley was about. Like, again, despite all the tabloids and his life was not, I mean, as I said, I was recently on the YouTube channel of my friend John Rogers, and we did like he's a YouTuber that goes along London. It is a fantastic job. Check him out on YouTube. And we did a video on occult London, and we were talking about Crowley a lot. And I said, and I'm going to repeat, I would not have loved to do that walk or go, you know, to the pub with Aleister Crowley. It seems like he was a very faulty individual, like somebody very maybe full of himself,
ego.
But then again, very. But then again, oftentimes, when we look at history, a lot of these characters that then become conduit for a spiritual transmission tend to be very faulty themselves.
Exactly. God uses the imperfect to get, you know, to help the imperfect. Right.
I think so. I think so. Mm. And that has been like, like when you see, when you read Crowley's biographies, and there are plenty, like I think the, you know, the Crowley biographer is a job on itself, right? Like this is why I'm not writing any biography on Crowley. First of all, I'm not an historian. I'm more of an amateur historian. But second of all, I think that there's like something like 20 biographies of Crowley's of various, various degree of detail. But again, if you read the Perdurabo by Richard Kaczynski, maybe it's the best, and it's like a 700 pages, you know, brick.
Yeah.
So it's full. You're gonna get everything, and you will see that when you are faced with the facts of his life that have been proven, peer reviewed, etc. Well, you realize that a lot of what you think you know, it's just like. I mean, Crowley flirted with the yellow press a lot. He was often on the Daily Mail. And we all know that the Daily Mail, even nowadays, I don't know if you can really trust everything that's written on that, right?
No, you can't.
And so when you understand that, when you really study his life, yeah, he was a very faulty individual, but somehow his more spiritual writings are beautiful. And you can tell that there was something else.
Yeah.
Speaking through him and writing through him. And I think that's, you know, that's what I'm concentrating on.
That's right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Right. And as he got older, that must have become more prevalent, you know, in his life, you know, because I think that as we all get older, you know, we go our wild ways, but we when we get older, we come back to the truth, you know, back to that beautiful knowledge, isn't it? And
absolutely.
When you said, this is really amazing. Can you please tell us about the Holy Guardian Angel? Why is the knowledge of the Holy Guardian Angel experience the ultimate spiritual goal? I love that.
So the concept of the Holy Guardian Angel is a very complex one. I mean, I read a book about it, right? In Crowley's system, in Thelema, you fundamentally have three milestones, okay? The first milestone is the moment you decide to embark on this path. That's it. Like there's no need for any sort of ritual. There's no need for anything really. Like you decide to start the path, right? If you were to join one of the institutions and magical orders that Crowley, you know, either founded or inherited through his life, that's when you would be, you know, formally initiated into them. Okay, but there's no need for that really. There's no need to join anything to go onto this path, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like, you know, you can study something yourself, or you can take a course. Let's put it like that. The easiest way I can put it. But the second milestone, and possibly the first truly important one, is what he defined as the knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel.
Mm.
Now, this term is loaded because, of course, the concept of the Holy Guardian Angel or the Guardian Angel, it's something that it's found in Christianity, of course, and it's usually understood as one angel of God that is assigned to you at the moment of your birth and looks over you so that, you know, throughout your life, he tries to steer you in the right direction. Crowley received this idea, first encountered this idea, I should say, when he was a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which is a very famous order that was founded here in London in 1888, and over its 12-15 years span, became the center of what is now known as the Western Magical Revival. It was an order that, you know, welcomed theosophists and Freemasons and also theater actors, like the very famous actress of her time, Florence Farr. She was one of the chiefs of the Golden Dawn. The poet William Butler Yeats was a chief of the Golden Dawn. So like he attracted a lot of very famous people for the time because it was something new. Like, yeah. It was something that was transcending, you know, gender divisions, and was transcending class divisions, and was trying to reorganize what was understood at the time as the Western esoteric tradition in a series of, like a school, in a series of grades where you could go step by step and receive a formal initiation. And they blended Rosicrucianism, Freemasonry, alchemy, including the first interest from Egypt, that was like Egyptian magic was being studied at the time for the first time. Egyptian language was being studied only like 100 years before it started, the study of Egyptian. And of course, the Egyptomania of the time played a big role.
Yeah, in that time.
And since the core of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was esoteric Christian at its core, because kind of Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry played a big role, that's where the guardian angel start to seep in. And they also started translating what is now known as the Greek magical papyri, which was a series of spells coming from late antiquity, very very long papyrus that was it's still found nowadays in the British Library, if I'm not mistaken. And basically, it's one of the earliest source of magic that we have that has been properly recorded in our recorded history. All these things go well together because between mixing the idea of the Christian guardian angel and mixing another idea that comes from the Greek magical papyri, that is the headless one, that is a spirit that has no head, because it could be that it has no head because it has no incarnation, it has no ego, and so it's a spirit that's always there looking after the initiate, the magician. It's still nebulous, right? And I try to make in the book, I try to give you my understanding of it. But this idea came together, and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn set up the experience of the Holy Guardian Angel as the gateway to the adept grade. So once one stopped being a novice and became finally an adept, that meant that they have contacted successfully these guardian angel spirit. Again, this tether between us and the divine. Angel, of course, is another term that comes from the Greek, and in Greek is angelos, and angelos means messenger. So angels are messengers, really. This idea that you have one unique messenger between you and the divine that could relay messages one way or the other, right?
That's right. I also, Marco, please. I always say angles of light. Angel,
I like that.
Angles of light, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're refracting the light from the above.
That's
that. One more thing I should say on this is that in Thelema, it takes a little different, it takes a different connotation. And in the sense that one thing that Crowley, you know, continued doing from what he learned in the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn is the idea of syncretism, right? And so he was a student of the early refractions of Indian mysticism coming from the East at the time. Yeah. Arthur Avalon just translated The Power of the Serpent, and so the first concepts of Tantra and yoga were starting to seep in from the East.
From the ancient Vedas and the Upanishads.
Absolutely. The and so he started bringing in those ideas. And we find, and so like Thelema is very heavy on yoga, and especially yoga as codified by Patanjali. So the eight limbs of yoga, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the final limb of yoga is Samadhi. And Samadhi is the union with the divine.
That's it.
So in Crowley's system of Thelema, these knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel is both the identification of an angel guide that eventually becomes the realization of what he dubbed as Nirvikalpa Samadhi, that is the final step of Samadhi, the full union with God. The point being is that if the three main concepts in Telema are, as we said at the beginning, Nuit, Hadit, and Raur Kuit, well, how do you bring Nuit and Hadit together? By embodying that Raur Kuit energy, and that is, in fact, becoming one with the Holy Guardian Angel and finally becoming the tether between space and time itself.
Yes.
That is why it's so important. And that is why it's a very lofty goal to achieve, but it's a completely possible. And yeah, there's plenty in the book I present and I analyze some rituals that Crowley left towards that goal. Yeah. And they are very ceremonial in nature. So they're really like the kind of rituals that everybody who hears the term magic might think, which means, you know, casting a circle and using strange barbers' names and chanting and invoking. But then I also offer another option, and that is using the book of thought, that is the tarot, pathway to try and start that conversation, because it is a knowledge, but it must be also a conversation. Mm. One thing is knowing what this Holy Guardian Angel is and represents for you. Another thing is starting that two-way discussion with them. And so in the book, I offer a magical way, and I would say a more mystical way and this is why I called it, you know, Aleister Crowley mysticism.
Yeah,
because mysticism. Again, like you start with the magic and you start with the doing, you start with creating a lot of ritual. But what you're trying to do is that almost like you eventually want to start stripping bare that ritual to get to the core of it. And that core is mysticism, in fact.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I believe that we're all magical. I believe that we can focus our consciousness, you know, our thoughts and feelings go out into the quantum, into the divine mind, into, you know, and they come back to us. So I believe that we can, you know, create and we can control and we can change our environment with our consciousness. It's so important. And that's why ceremonies, you know, all ancients, our ancient, you know, ancestors held ceremony very highly, you know, and you know, the moon and the sun and the planets, they was all part of astrotheology, you know, the sun, it was all part of our ancient, you know, ceremonies that we've forgotten that. And it's so important, you know. I still do, as a yogini, I still do my moon ceremonies every full moon and every new moon. And it's just it's a time when the veil is very, very thin, that we can use our consciousness to get a result, you know, in the physical, isn't it? Bringing that spirit. That's why we all have that alchemy. We can all spiritually heal others. We all have that within. It's just knowing that. And also, I'd like to just point out about the Holy the Guardian Angel. If we don't believe in them, they can't come down and help us. It's our belief and knowing that the connection is there and reaching out with our consciousness to that divine that opens us up when we have silent mind for them to come in and give us that divine intelligence.
In my books, I make the point that you can see the angels, and you can see especially the Holy Guardian Angel, as something external to you, and that is a perfectly fine approach. But one thing that Telema offers is also a path for those who kind of struggle with that, right? Mm-hmm. Because as you know, like, we live in a very materialistic world, we have lost a lot of contact with the spiritual.
Yes,
it has come back a little bit, but I don't know. if it's enough yet, right?
Yeah.
But the point is that Telema already 100 years ago was trying to give a pathway for both kind of humans, right? Those who are like you and me, maybe that have any problem in realizing that there are aggregates of consciousness outside that might not have a physical body, but they're absolutely as real as me and you, and you can start a discussion with them, an interaction with them. But there's also people that are still very resistant to this idea. And Telema offers the path of seeing the Holy Guardian Angel, seeing the deities as, I like to call the term, call them like vectors of transcendence. Again, like in almost like philosophical constructs that you can engage with And you will still get to the, you will still get to what, to the awakening, to the enlightenment, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that once people reach that goal, that then when all the difference in, you know, completely fall, in the sense that one person who has the knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel, I don't think they're going to have, they're going to literally like start a debate on Twitter about no. you know, if the angel is a real being or not.
No.
It is what it is, right? It yes. is the ontological existence. And that's what matters, because mm-hmm. once you have that connection, and once the duality of the you and the spirit, or the you and the word, as starts to fall down. And I think
right.
that, you know, in Thelemic terms, the knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel is when that duality starts to fall down, but hasn't fallen down yet. Because mm-hmm. there's still a process between you and the angel. Like there's still a duality that has become a union, but that exactly. union is made of two poles yet, right? Like
yeah,
the
yeah,
human
yeah.
and the divine.
That's
there's
right.
the second step, like, and maybe
merging.
My third, yeah, the merging and the annihilation. It's what we call in Thelema Babylon, which is a term that has been Babylon is if you Google Thelema, Babylon is a name that comes up even more than Crowley nowadays, because it is seen as a female deity of empowerment, and has been like Lilith, like many others, you know, dark goddesses, has become very popular in modern times. And I try to make the point that in Thelema, if you really study the source material, well, she is not just a goddess. She is the annihilation of all polarities and all duality. She is seen as the cup of the grail that received the blood of the saints, in the sense that received the blood, received the egos of everybody who has dedicated their entire lives to the pursuit of the grail itself. And so they become the grail. It's how, you know, in Arthurian myth, Parsifal can never find the grail up until he understands what the grail stands for, right?
Yes.
And that's when he can finally grasp it and heal King Arthur and the land with it. That is where Thelema goes. Like the knowledge and conversation yeah. with the Holy Guardian Angel is the first step, is that duality that becomes union.
Yeah.
But then that union too has to dissolve into nothingness, which
that's
is not
right.
nihilistic. It's just like it's going back, almost like going back into the womb, returning to the source. Returning inside it, and from that vantage point, I don't know, because I'm not there yet. But ideally, I can see what that would mean. But then again, everything you can see, it's, you know, everything you can think, everything you can say, it's duality in itself. Like, because
that's
you
right.
think
because
of something and you say something, there's a process there. So there's no annihilation there. But you can have an idea of what that matters.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's right. That's beautiful. Because, you know, that we come from the oneness, don't we? We come mm-hmm. from the oneness down here. Our soul is the divine flame projected, but it's all the same soul consciousness within every single being on the earth. Mm-hmm. There's only one soul, yeah. one super soul that we all share, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And exactly when you that. Understand that, you understand the oneness. We're here to overcome duality, the light and the dark and the masculine and feminine and the good and the bad and the hot and the cold that's within us, so that we yeah. have that oneness, the way, so that we come back to the wholeness. And
absolutely,
and there is no separation. That's what we're all yearning for.
And you know, when I speak about this, I find that a lot of people still have struggles with this, because they almost always tell me, so what happens when I die? And that is a good question, right? Because if we all share this one soul, and I think we do, what happens to our individual consciousness? Like, what happens to Joanne? What happens to Marco when we die? Well, Thelema offers a pathway to that as well. And the pathway is, if you're able to, if you dedicate your life to what we call like the pursuit of the great work, and that is, if you're able to eventually establish a connection with the Holy Guardian Angel, In the moment when you die, it's almost like you get to decide what to do. Like, you decide if you want to go back to the source and complete the journey. You can decide to come back into this plane, into this earth, with memories of what you've done, or maybe without. It's like you get to decide. Or you can decide to go somewhere else. You can decide to experience the incredibly, in the infinite, multifaceted reality of existence in ways that, at the moment, we cannot even fathom. So this is why, you know, establishing the knowledge and conversation with the Holy Guardian Angel becomes the most pressing matter for everybody who wants to live, you know, a well-lived spiritual life. Because in the moment of death, it's when so you have important. To relinquish your mask,
yes.
you get to decide what to do, pretty yeah. much.
That's why it's so important. Our whole life is preparing us for that moment of death.
Absolutely, yeah.
That exactly. is so important. And, you know, you can all them things that you said about after death is really beautiful, and you can go on to other multidimensional mm-hmm. realms to become an ascended master that goes on. The evolution is never ending, yeah. is it not?
That is, you know, this is exactly what in the structure of time, because like I said, I mentioned that you don't have to join any order, but there is a sort of like a step by step encoded into the system of Thelema. And once one is an adept, well, what the next step is becoming a master, right? Yeah. And that is exactly what you mean, like the ascended masters. The idea is that if you're able to what we call like cross the abyss,
yes.
And the abyss is a Kabbalistic concept that has been mutated into Thelema. If you're able to cross the abyss and you're able to be reborn as a master of the temple, well, then then again, you get to decide. Usually, what Crowley say, like, masters of the temples take the bodhisattva vow. That is, they come back, even if they have transcended duality, yeah. they decide to come back so that they can guide others.
Help
they
humanity.
Can guide others on the same path, right? Yeah. Because again, like, we only have one certainty in this life. When we are born, we don't know if we'll be rich or poor, happy or sad, if we'll live through a life of misery or a life of happiness. But we all know that we will die. That's the one thing, right? Everything we do, especially everything we do spiritually, is a preparation towards that. And this is, I think this is why, like again, like my first book was about magic, and mm-hmm. it was about, you know, what you can do in this world. Like, okay, how can you prepare to live this world more fully? And the second book is about mysticism, because while I never really outwardly say it, well, this practice is prepare you for the moment of death.
Yes, right?
To get to the point of that with eyes full open, fully ready to accept that, because that's growing pains for us and for our fellow men.
That's right. Yeah. For us to overcome that's what we're, you know, here for, to overcome our ego, our darkness, our negativity, which I call, you know, that's the evil, you know, that's evil. You know, that's what they called it. Sin in old language was the name of the goddess of the moon. And, you know, to sin. And what is the moon? The moon is about emotions. To sin on oneself, the self-sabotage of that is our destructive, evil, negative thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which are stopping us, and they're limiting us from seeing the truth of our true divine self, because we are human and divine, are we not?
Absolutely. And this is where, you know, engaging with practices like magical, mystical practice can and will help you. It's like learning how to step out from your day-to-day routines, from your worries about, you know, paying your mortgage or paying your bills, which is all fundamental things. You should never not do that. But the problem is like reclaiming a space where you can go back to talk to the divine spark inside yourself, because by doing that, it's how you realize that you're not the mask you identify so much with, but there's something deeper. And that something deeper, in fact, already has the answers you seek.
That's right.
You just have to learn to listen to it. And that to do that, again, this is what you can do learning certain magical practices or certain mystical practices, because it's like about, in my book, I speak about, you know, building the body of light.
And, yes.
A lot of people think of the body of light as the aura, and it is the aura, but it really is.
The Merkaba.
Yeah, it's exactly like the chariot you inhabit. And that is, you know, a chariot is both a vehicle that takes you places, but I would say it also becomes almost like a transmitter receiver radio. And you know, you learn how to, by refining it, you learn how to fine tune the frequencies that you connect with, and by doing that you listen to a message that's been there waiting for you from since the moment you were born.
And then
things become, I don't want to say, I'm not selling, you know, easy solutions. It's not like you hit the jackpot and that's fine. No, it's, but life becomes more directed, and your actions become more pointed, right? And your anxieties, well, you learn how to deal with them in a more faithful, positive way.
That's wonderful. My dogs are good. Shush! my dogs. That's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And please tell us, where can we read your book? Is it out for pre-order?
So yes, the book is out on pre-order. And
sorry. Where can we buy it? Where can we read your amazing book? Yeah.
Well, so you can read. You can find it anywhere books are sold. Amazon, of course, you'll find it there. You can find it on the Watkins Publishing website directly. You can pre-order it in your local bookstore. Here in London, the esoteric bookstores, you know, Watkins Books, Threadwell's, Atlantis, they will all carry it.
Yeah.
And the book is out on December the 2nd, so a few weeks from now.
Lovely. Brilliant. Well, I tell you, Marco, that was such an amazing, wonderful, deep, lovely show that we just did. And I want to thank you for your lovely divine wisdom and, you know, bringing a practical guide to mysticism and demystifying some of these, you know, of Aleister Crowley and what he was all about. So thank you for being on the Great Awakening Show.
Thank you, Joanne. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Yes. And I will get it all together and it will come out in the next few weeks on the radio.
That's fine, yeah.
And on the YouTube, and I definitely